many nerds, too many nerds is what I like. Inducting and dancing and dying around the mic. They interview cause they got guests and they will school you about comedy, comedy, ha, 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 ha. Comedy nerds, I wanna know all what they know. This is the comedy, comedy nerd show. Comedy, comedy, ha, ha, nerds, ha, ha. What's so funny, they tell you so. Ha, 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 nerds.
Well, hello there.
Hello.
Come on in. It's nice to see you.
Yes, and we are broadcasting today, not from our usual studio, mm-hmm. from our brand new studio, Studio 3A.
Yeah.
In Astoria, Queens. 3A. Studio 3A. That's
yeah, no. Well, you guys say state-of-the-art.
Yeah, state-of-the-art studio.
3A.
Yeah.
So, welcome. Welcome yes. to the studio. Welcome to the Comedy Nerds. I'm Dan McInerney.
I'm Def Diodato.
Thank you guys so much for joining us today.
Yes.
I'm going to talk like
that's great color commentary by me. Yes.
I'm going to talk like I'm on NPR for the rest of the podcast.
Okay, that's going to be maddening.
You know, for just a cup of coffee a day, you can help support this studio or this station, whatever.
Do we have a solo violin noise that we can be putting under him the entire
time? No, you know, what we do need, though, is like the 6 second, like, they always have like the little like jazz solo that goes off, like, you know, I'm Leonard Lopate. Tune in tomorrow. Which sounds nothing. I was trying to do a trumpet. That sounded like a guitar. Whatever. I never said I was an expert at making instrument noises with my mouth. I'm not on trial here. This is ridiculous. All right.
I think you're out of order.
I'm out of order. You're out of order, sir. This whole damn podcast is out of order. I won't stand for it. I won't stand for it. All right. What are we talking about?
Wow. Okay. So let's get into news, and then we'll get into other stuff. So I believe this time you wrote down the news.
I do. Well, I did.
So you printed it out.
Some news articles. Item number one, The Onion has, or did up until very recently, have like a local coverage section.
Yes.
Which is good. They did music and all other kind of things. But most importantly,
The AV Club.
Right, the AV Club. I'm sorry.
AV Club.
They are kind of separate entities. But within the printed version of the newspaper,
yes,
they had a local section where they would, you know, tell you things to go say. That is no longer the case. It happened very suddenly. And the latest issue of The Onion that I picked up did not have it in there. Now, it's not the end of the world, but I think it's just one now less avenue. Mm-hmm. For comedians here in New York. I don't know about other places. I hope it's not happening all over the country, because I know they had a number of them in like major cities. But definitely New York is just one last place now to get the word out about your show. And it wasn't advertised. They still have advertising, obviously. You know, the UCB and the Pit and whatever advertises their theaters. But that costs money, as opposed to this, which, you know, they would just tell you about shows. And if you were lucky or you were good, they would talk about your show and people would come to see it.
Right. And for those people outside of the New York area, and even for the people in the New York area, the thing about the AV Club section, compared to other places that you could sort of advertise or get the word out, because you can do it in like The Voice, Village Voice, or like New York Press, I think, is, you know.
I mean, The Voice.
Nobody does New York Press.
The Voice. I mean, obviously The Voice has other things going on. I'm not
attacking
them, but their comedy section is pretty weak.
Right. And I guess my point also, though, is with The Village Voice, I feel like everybody is getting it.
Yeah.
Like across all demographics, whereas The Onion is more more targeted towards the audience that are going to go see independent comedy in the first place, which is what we're really talking about. You know, I mean, they also mention what's going on at Caroline's and stuff like that. But Caroline's doesn't need it.
Mm-hmm.
You know about Caroline's. You know about Gotham. If you're in Manhattan, you know about comics. So you go to those anyway. It's the independent shows. So now, they're going to get some love by The Voice and by, you know, the press and stuff like that. But losing the AV Club is really going to hurt those shows, because those are the people who most likely are going to go see it.
Yeah. And I mean, anytime
you can't make it here.
That's what I'm saying.
If you can't make it
here,
I don't
know. It's so weird. I would think maybe second only to Chicago, but I think of all places, this would be a place where it would be very popular. And I mean, I don't. They didn't really give a reason. I guess. I mean, the economy. Them telling you shows to go doesn't necessarily benefit them, so that might, right. you know, benefits other people. But yeah, I don't know. It's a shame. I guess the economy.
Yeah.
Anyway, sorry to see you guys go.
News story one.
News story two. This is kind of old, but I forgot to mention last week. Conan O'Brien is on Twitter.
Yep.
And this was his first tweet. Today I interviewed a squirrel in my backyard and then threw it a commercial. Somebody help me. We miss you, Conan. We love you and we miss you.
Yes, he's tweeted since then, and they've only, as far as I've seen, only been of trivial things. I think I read one today where he basically said, hey, they have really good fries at this place near the airport. If you're going to go, get the fries.
Yeah.
And it was like McDonald's. It was like, get the fries at McDonald's at this place by the airport. So, yeah. I don't know if he's living that life or if he's trying to be funny. In my head, I almost feel like he is just like in like slippers, and, right. you know, and a robe and just walking around with like a stuffed animal and remote control, like the, you know, like Steve Martin in The Jerk.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
Just wandering around.
Yeah.
I mean, he'll be fine, but I think that's how I'm going to picture him.
It's got to be nice, though,
which is all the time.
When you're like, they gave me $50 million.
Yep.
I don't have anything to do.
Mm-hmm.
And you can just be like, you know what? I'm just going to be drunk for February.
Mm-hmm.
Just all of February. I'm just going to be drunk the entire time. Who's going to stop me?
Yeah.
No one's going to tell me no. I got all this money. I got nothing to do.
I'm going
to
be drunk. I'm going to sit on my front lawn with a bunch of baseballs, so when kids go by, I'm going to throw baseballs at them.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You know, so they know to get off my lawn, but also free baseball. So that's my plan if that's I get nice. $50 million.
Yeah. Now that I own a house, I'm looking forward to the day where I can legitimately scream at a kid, now it's my football. Now it's mine. You kids want to play in the street? Now it's mine.
But,
okay?
the difference is you will play with it. You'll be like on your front lawn.
And they'll be like, now it's mine. Who wants to play? You go long. You guys go long. Oh, I threw the ball over there. Damn it. Now it's yours again. But yeah. So anyway, my whole point was, Conan, come back to us as soon as you can. Item number three.
Yes.
Viacom and Hulu have parted ways.
Mm-hmm.
According to this article. It was many articles, but the article I have in my hand.
Okay.
It's the one I was referring to. As early as next week, or this week when you're listening to this, The Daily Show, The Colbert Report, and other Comedy Central programs will be removed from the site. Viacom's decision is a serious loss for Hulu. This week, The Daily Show is listed as the third most watched show on the site behind Lost and Family Guy.
Mm-hmm.
I'll say this. Now, obviously, I don't know the mechanics behind whatever was going on. I don't know all the details. But I feel like this is a terrible mistake for Viacom.
I agree.
In that The Daily Show and The Colbert Report, as much as I love them, are very low. I don't know what the word is, but sort of there's a low threshold. Meaning, I watch them on Hulu because it's very convenient to watch it on Hulu.
Okay.
When it's not convenient, I probably won't watch it as much. You know what I mean? It's not something that I search out. As opposed to, ironically, a show like Lost, which I watch, I will go out of my way to make sure I don't miss an episode of Lost. Now, admittedly, it's a completely different thing.
It is.
But I'm not, you know, what's going to happen is I'll start DVRing Daily Show and Colbert Report. 3 weeks will go by. I'll look and notice that I have 30 episodes and I'll delete them all because I'm never going to get around to watching them. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, as opposed to like, I'm getting ready in the morning, I just turn on Colbert and just watch it while I'm getting ready.
Yeah. Okay. But I mean, that's the difference between you and I have only probably missed 2 or 3 episodes of The Daily Show in the last year. Like, I make sure to watch it every time.
Okay.
But I agree with you that the benefit of Hulu was if I can't watch it at night, I will just, like, when I'm on the exercise bike in the morning, I'll just throw it on. And it's great stuff for that, like, morning exercise time if you use Hulu during that time because it's new every day. It's like, okay, great, you know, because like, you run out of stuff to watch.
Right.
Because I have Hulu, but I also have DVR. So I DVR everything I want to watch anyway. So, and then I watch it. But since Daily Show is kicked out so often, it's a great Hulu thing.
Mm.
That being said, they're not taking it off the web. They are just saying you have to go to thedailyshow.com or thecolbertreport.com, or maybe it's Colbert Nation. I don't know. Whatever it is for Colbert. You have to go to that site, and you can watch it just the same you would anywhere else. Mm. It was nicer with Hulu because you put it in your queue, then it's waiting for you, and it doesn't delete itself, and yeah. you know which ones you've watched and which ones you haven't. But yeah, it's going to be a big loss for Hulu because it's that type of audience that will watch that show on there. It'll come back because I think once Viacom realizes that like not enough people are following it over, they're gonna have to put it back on. They're gonna have to go back because you don't want to lose that many audience people. You don't want to, like you said, you don't want to, like you might not follow it. And you don't want to get out of people's minds for too long, because then they just go, oh, here's that other thing that I do, and then they never come back because it'll always be there. You can always just come back when you want to.
Yeah.
So you forget about it, and then all of a sudden you're just like, oh, I'll just watch, Jimmy Fallon instead. Not that there's anything wrong with Jimmy Fallon, but now that's just the thing that you watch instead, and you fucked yourself.
I mean, and I'll say this about like the internet in general, and I don't consider myself a sort of great hacker or anything, but I was catching up on Lost on Hulu, and I got to a point where all of a sudden the episodes were not available on Hulu anymore. There was like a gap. It suddenly jumped like 12 episodes.
Yeah.
Now here's the thing, ABC and Hulu. I'm just gonna tell you this. I realized,
and we know you're out there listening.
I realized I couldn't watch it on Hulu. 10 minutes later, I was watching the episode that I wanted.
Yeah.
Without commercials and without anyone tracking that I was watching. You see what I'm getting at here?
Mm-hmm.
So that
broke the law.
I happily watched it with the commercials and everything, and I gave you my email address and whatever so you could track me because of the convenience. Because it was easy, boom, it was right there, everything's easy. This is what I'm saying about the low threshold. Once the easiness of it goes away, I could go to thedailyshow.com, but I'm probably not, because the first thing they do in the morning is click on Hulu, and whatever is up there that I can watch, I start watching while I'm getting ready in the morning. Hmm. So if Colbert and Daily Show aren't there, it's out of sight, out of mind. It's just immediately going to like go away. And a show like The Daily Show, I'm not going to track down through the internet and watch it because there's a new one every day. It's not quite, whatever. It's not like if I miss three, I'll be like, well, now I can't follow the plot. I have no idea what's going on. Like, you don't need to watch it, every day. So again, it's sort of a low threshold thing.
Speaking of Lost for a minute, and then I think we should move into our topic.
Yep.
What I thought was really cool, we accidentally watched a little bit of Lost last night.
Mm-hmm.
That being,
for
I guess,
the love,
Tuesday.
I haven't watched it, for the love of
no,
God.
No, I'm not going to ruin it for you.
Don't tell me.
I'm not going to ruin it for you at all.
Okay.
But what I... Yeah, everybody died. Everybody's dead. That's the secret.
So much.
Yeah. No, the thing that I thought was really cool about it, I don't know why I'm like on a comedy podcast pushing you to watch Lost.
Yeah.
But the thing that I thought was cool about it was that, like, look, we know that most of you people haven't watched in, like, four seasons, so there's a scroll on the bottom of the screen the whole time that says this person is, the wife of this person. Yeah.
The enhanced version.
Yeah.
That's called the enhanced version.
Okay, yeah.
Or as my wife and I refer to it as the pop-up video version.
Right.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh, I might actually watch it now because I don't... You'll just tell me everything I need to know. That's awesome.
Well, I assume you guys didn't watch it regularly, right?
No.
It's at the point now where someone who has watched it regularly, now I need that. It is so unbelievably complicated now.
Okay.
There are multiple timelines. People have turned into other people. It's a thing. Like, it's awesome, but yeah, it is not the easiest show. You can't just casually watch it. You literally need to pause every 5 minutes and look at your wife and be like, okay, do you know what's going on? Let's break out the chart and talk about this.
Right, because even in the explanations, they were like, this is Flash Sideways World 2.
Yeah.
Or whatever, like version 2. And I was like, wait, so you're flashing sideways with two alternate realities? Like, what?
Yeah.
How is...
God, it's awesome, though. It's awesome. All right, before we get into our topic, though...
Okay. Oh, I have my thing, too. But
go
ahead. No, go ahead and do your thing.
Well, I was gonna do sad news from the past. Sad news!
Okay, yeah, then my thing
sad
will make sense afterwards.
Sad news from the past! Sad news! This is some sad news, guys. Just get ready for this.
Uh-oh.
This is from July 17th, 1921. A Sunday, if I remember correctly. And I didn't. I read that off the screen. Dorothy Stone hurt in Freeport Circus. Comedian's daughter is thrown and kicked by a pony in Actors Affair. And then it just goes on to say she was a performer in a Wild West show and circus at the Lights Club, an organization composed of theatrical people living on Long Island. Miss Stone, known as the Queen of Chin Chin Ranch, because why wouldn't she be, was shaken up by her fall and bruised by kicks from the pony, but was otherwise not injured. Kicked by a pony. And we can laugh at it because it happened a long time ago. Over close to 100 years ago, some girl got kicked by a pony.
I'm going to assume that everybody was fine, including the pony, because sound engineer's here and she'll get mad if I say anything else.
Oh, yeah. Oh, should I not mention the part where they shot the pony?
Oh, no, don't mention that part.
No, that's a joke. They didn't shoot the pony. At least not according to this. Although they probably did, because, like,
wow.
In 1921, they were probably like, that pony has the vapors. She's coming over here. She's coming over here. What are you doing? Don't choke me. I didn't shoot the pony.
Is that a euphemism for something?
No, it's a euphemism for everything, my
awesome.
Friend.
So before we move into, if anybody listened last week, they know that I am deeply looking into the Fatty Arbuckle murder.
Do you want, like, music? Dun, 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 dun.
I'm not going to talk over music. Okay. Supposedly, according to the man, Fatty Arbuckle died of a heart attack. I've been doing a very little bit of research, and what I've discovered and what I discovered is not only did he die in the middle of a scumbag, he died the night that he signed a contract with Warner Brothers Studio. Coincidence? I don't believe in coincidences.
Dun, 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 dun,
there are no coincidences. So here's what I know. I know that when you sign a deal with a famous actor in Studio Hollywood Town, you get insurance on that actor.
Uh-huh.
Because something could go wrong.
Yeah.
So all of a sudden, there's this actor, you signed a contract with him, and he dies that night.
Let's not forget
that
this is the height of the Great Depression we're talking about.
Yes.
Money is tight.
So
tight.
So those are the only leads I have right now. But I'm going to put a couple of calls into Warner Brothers and see if I can talk to somebody over there and find out if we can move forward.
I want to know more about this.
Yeah, so stay tuned for next week.
That's a Law and Order.
Okay, it felt a little sitcom
song. No, it's a Law and Order theme song. I told you, at the top, I'm not good at making the instrument sounds with my mouth.
And you proved it just now.
I know.
So
that's what I'm trying to say.
All right, so getting into the show, we're going to start by talking about something that irritated us very much, and that'll move us into our topic. And the topic is going to be studio audiences.
Mm-hmm.
But we're going to start with a specific studio audience. The night before we recorded this podcast, which is Wednesday of the previous week before you're listening to it. I'm not going to give you dates because I don't know them, because I don't know what today's date is.
Today's March 3rd.
So March 2nd?
3rd.
Today's the 3rd. No, I'm saying the thing that we're talking about happened on March 2nd, for goodness sake, people.
Okay. First of all, it happened on...
I'm telling a story.
It didn't happen on the 2nd. It happened on the 2nd, which is he said twice so far, which is the day that comes between the 1st and the 2nd.
It's
the 2nd.
I had some pizza. We already talked about how that affects... your ability to speak clearly. I apologize.
I'm on your side. I'm saying it happened at the Shekin of Schmarch.
Okay.
How's the Schmarch weather?
The incident in question is the stand-up routine of none other than Miss Sarah Palin. Sarah Palin appeared on The Tonight Show with Jay Leno.
Yeah.
Only had second episode since coming back. And not only did she interview... but she also decided to make her stand-up debut on The Tonight Show. And I spent the whole day being mad at it.
Mm-hmm.
And I've been trying to figure out exactly what made me so mad.
I mean, I watched it too.
Okay.
And it enraged me.
Yes.
But it enraged me, but also made me kind of tired. Like,
made you tired?
Well, like, it's exhausting. Like, just there's so much wrong happening in that one little clip that I just, I almost moved past rage into, oh, whatever. I mean, you know, let's just let them
I like
do
rage so much
do what
more.
You,
I have such a capacity
for
rage.
I have trouble
rage.
Holding on to anger, whereas you are the Hoover Dam of anger.
Yes.
You can hold on to anger for a very long time. You can build up and build up and build up.
Mm-hmm.
And then, I don't know.
That's what I do.
And then the dam bursts.
Okay, so for those of you who haven't listened to it, go listen to it. It's on Hulu.
Yeah, you can find it
online. Previously mentioned Hulu.
Ah.
And I think it's fair to say, without being overly critical, that it was not funny.
Yes.
And granted, she's a politician of sorts.
Hmm.
Although more now, technically, I guess she is a pundit.
Yeah, she's officially a pundit.
Yeah.
A personality.
Yes, head of the Tea Party. Unofficial head of the Tea Party.
Right.
So she's not supposed to be particularly funny.
Mm-hmm.
She was particularly unfunny,
yeah,
in my opinion.
Mm-hmm.
And she was particularly unfunny on one of the biggest stages in the world.
Yeah.
For comedians. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, obviously, like, the Super Bowl was bigger than the Jay Leno show. But ask a comedian and they will tell you that performing on The Tonight Show as a stand-up comic is huge.
Yeah.
It is similar to, like, making it to the Olympics kind of thing. You know, like, that's your thing.
Mm-hmm.
And Miss Sarah Palin just got to go ahead and do it.
Yeah.
She just got to go ahead and try out her funny. And
a number of things. First of all, here's where it piled on. A, it was on The Tonight Show with Jay Leno. This
True.
Is the first level of anger that starts to build for me. Second of all, it's Sarah Palin. I can't imagine what anyone sees in her. I find her repellent for the most part. But whatever.
All right.
What am I going to say?
Okay.
Not funny. Horrible. Then the studio audience reacts at the end of each of her quote-unquote jokes, not by laughing. Oh, no. By applauding.
Yes.
And this is the part that kills me.
Right.
Because they don't think it's funny. But they, you know, they like her, though. And so they're going, oh, yay, she said something bad about Obama, and we're going to clap. There's no comedy happening.
I'm not even 100% sure that is true, that they like her. We're going to take a quick break.
Yeah.
We're going to come back, and we're going to talk about why, like you said, a lot of our outrage has to do with studio audiences,
yeah,
and how they totally affect, and in my opinion, fuck up the comedy world.
Okay.
All right.
Woo!
Do you have a question or topic you would like to hear the Comedy Nerds discuss? Send us an email to info@thecomedynerds.com or stop by the site and click Contact Us at the top of the page. We look forward to hearing from you at thecomedynerds.com.
And we're back. I'm here talking today with General Petraeus of the Armed Forces in Iraq. Now, General, I thought I was Terry Gross. I'm sorry.
I thought you were too.
I know. Well, I look a lot like her. So I guess people make that mistake all the time. And we're back.
Studio audiences. Okay.
Yeah.
Now you were talking about how the audience loved her. And here's the thing.
I'm going to stop you.
Oh.
Because I don't want you,
God forbid, I make
to
a
talk
point.
About studio audiences and ignore our studio audience that is so patiently sitting on their hands. They're
yes.
not making any sound. They're being perfectly respectful.
Right.
And I just want to say, you guys, all the greatest studio audience anyone could ever have. Okay? Now, they're not going to clap. You would think they would clap and cheer, but no. Because they are polite and they know that they are just
yes.
going to sit there and let us do our show.
Right. We didn't build Studio 3A so that they could make
with,
all this
with
noise.
With 500-seat bleachers for them to sit on.
Yes.
For them to make noise and whoop it up and ruin the show. No, they understand their role is to sit there and just stare at us and give us moral support, which I think is really nice of them. But I'm sorry, I interrupted what you were going to say.
Now, I've been part of a studio audience
mm-hmm.
on several occasions. And the truth of the matter is, when you applaud and when you laugh has very little to do with you, for the most part.
Mm-hmm.
There's a person who warms you up. There are people who tell you that the show will be better the more excited you are. And then there are gigantic signs that say, applaud.
Yeah. Well, also, the warm-up comic will also often instruct you on how and when to applaud.
Right.
he'll say, okay, now, oh, come on, more. Like, they're going to come out, and I want everyone to, you know,
yeah,
clap, and you're going to whoop and everything.
And frequently, you will see them, if you catch the right show, you will see them doing it live during the show.
Right.
You know, when they're not showing the audience, you will see a person up there, like, with their hands over their head, like, telling everybody to applaud and getting them excited. And in the Sarah Palin case, I feel like she did as well as she did because it was in the best interest of the Jay Leno show. Right. For her to do well, and the applause signs were going off all over the place. Because I guarantee you, when your average stand-up comedian comes there, they don't get the benefit of the applause sign. They don't get the benefit of, like, a warm-up comic saying, you have to love this guy. You know, and Sarah Palin got that.
Yeah.
And you left it with an impression of, like, that everybody loved her. And the truth is, even somebody who is super into her, it wasn't that funny. It wasn't the whole room laughing and applauding funny. Mm-hmm. It was 25-30% of the room laughing. I've done stand-up more than enough times to know what jokes merit an applause break and what don't.
Yeah.
And none of those merited an applause break. And that's why I have a problem with studio audiences. Again, being part of it, you fall into it. You can't. You can't just sit there and not react with the crowd.
Yeah.
You do it. I don't know if you saw recently, they had a clip going around YouTube. It might not have been recent. I probably saw it like a year ago. And we go to the punching bag a lot. 3.5 men without the soundtrack.
Without the laugh track, yeah.
Without the laugh track. And it's just spooky and mean. You know, like, it's not, you know, whether you want it, whether you think it's funny or not, when you pull the soundtrack, the laugh track out of the show, it is just everybody's like, vicious.
Yeah.
You know? And for me, most of the shows that I enjoy do not have that laugh track. And I feel as though the laugh track is a way of excusing poorly written jokes. And excusing jokes, excusing stuff that is just sort of like funny in concept, but you wouldn't really laugh at it.
Mm-hmm.
So by getting other people to laugh that you psychologically think, well, I should be laughing too. That must be funny because I'm hearing people react to it. That must be where the joke is. And then everybody thinks that the show is way funnier than it really was we should just be making funnier things.
Right.
You're not supposed to agree that quickly. We have another 17 minutes.
No, I'm done. That's it. You're
all right. Well, thank you guys for joining us. Thank you to the studio audience.
Shh, be quiet. No, I mean, I agree with you. What I was saying about Sarah Palin doing stand-up comedy is that I think she had a sympathetic audience. Perhaps not everyone in the audience agreed with her, but I think for the most part, you were saying, like, well, it's an LA crowd, but it's an LA crowd that
I was saying that off camera. I mean, off mic, by the way.
Off mic, yeah. I'm sorry. But it's an LA crowd that went to see The Tonight Show with Jay Leno. So I don't think they're, you know, I think they're people who probably, they're probably mostly tourists, but they're also probably people who subscribe to a worldview that I don't subscribe to. I don't think you do.
No.
I'm sure Sound Engineer doesn't. So, I think Sarah Palin, basically, she wasn't so much telling jokes as she was going, da-da-da, da-da-da-da, da-da-da-da, Congress. And everyone went, I don't like Congress, yay! And then she went, da-da-da, 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 Obama. And everyone went, yay! Because, I think that's what you're talking about, the studio audience. Like, watching the 2.5 Men without the laugh track, is that, that's the other thing, that they do the same thing. It's, you know, the rhythm, like, they end on a certain word or, like, a certain way.
Yeah.
Indicating to the audience, whether they know it or not, here's where you laugh.
Right.
You
know, they could be speaking French, and we would know when the laugh
was supposed to go. We would know when the laugh was supposed to go. It's da-da-da-da-da-da, ba-da-dum-bum. And then you're like, oh, that's where the joke comes in. Now, I forget where it was, actually. I remember somebody, it was some comedian. Oh, I think it was maybe the Andy Kaufman book. He was trying to break the rules of comedy. And I think he realized at one point that he was watching some comedian that every time he did a punchline, he touched his stomach. And there was some show where they were having a problem with the sound.
Mm-hmm.
And so you couldn't really hear the comic, but he didn't know that. The comic didn't know that. And he touched his stomach and the audience laughed. It was like a Pavlovian response. Like, they couldn't hear the joke, but they knew that the punchline had come. They laughed anyway. And I think this was an epiphany to him. Maybe it was Steve Martin. Oh, actually, it might have been Steve Martin, actually. I think it might have been the Steve Martin book. But yeah, like, it was like an epiphany to him that it was like, yeah, he's not even like, they don't even know what they're laughing at. Like, right. They know they like this guy, and they know he got to the end of the joke.
And
this is where the laugh goes.
Yeah, and that's not even to really insult audiences per se, but it is a common thing. It is just human nature that when the rest of the crowd does something, and when you've built up a certain expectation, that you just go with it. You fall into it. You don't know that you're doing it.
Yeah, and let's be fair. It's not like the Daily Show and Colbert audiences
don't
do the same exact thing.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? I mean, they applaud and scream, da-da-da-da-da-da-da, Cheney, and they go, blah! They go nuts.
Right. And,
you know?
And to that point, because, yeah, we should insult our own, as well. The Daily Show updates when the crowd isn't there are never nearly as funny as the one, you know, like when you see like the update at like 7 o'clock before the episode's going to happen, those are never nearly as funny as the show itself. And that's because there's nobody applauding there. And there's that expectation of like somebody should be enjoying it.
I mean, the fun of those shows is those guys in their own way playing off the audience.
Oh,
you know what I mean? So, I think especially Colbert, but even Stewart, you know, plays the audience like a fiddle. And I love when he's like, when they laugh at something they weren't really expecting it to laugh. He's like, really? That's the thing that got you? And then, you know, Colbert obviously has his own thing going on. But yeah, but there's still that, you know, da-dun-da-da, ba-dum-bum, and the audience goes nuts. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
And I think...
Do you think then in that situation... that those writers are writing from the room instead of the audience at home? You know what I mean? Like, are they trying to... Is it a situation where you only need to appease the people in the room and then you will get the people at home?
No, I don't think so. I think because if they weren't, then you wouldn't like it at home. I mean, even though you're getting that...
But that's my point. I'm saying Pavlovian, you're only liking it at home because of the Pavlovian thing.
Well, yeah. But, I think it wouldn't be the same without the studio audience. But, I mean, I think you would still like it. I mean, there's also, I think it was, Seth Meyers, I think, who called it clapter when you don't think a joke's all that funny. Which is, I mean, mainly what Sarah Palin, what people are doing Sarah Palin, too. We don't think the joke's all that funny, but you agree with the point of view.
Mm.
And so you applaud rather than laugh. I mean, and the Daily Show does that, too. But again, it's also sort of like, I'll admit that, you know, I watch the Daily Show, and when they sort of go after someone I don't like, there's a serotonin released in my brain. Because I go, yeah, get him. Go after him. You did it. Woo, you got that guy. And it makes you feel good. Mm-hmm. I mean, there's no...
Like the Sarah Palin crowd was saying, yeah, Congress.
Yeah, in all seriousness, like, yeah, like, yay. Like, there's a caveman lizard brain response when you go, hooray, our side. Hooray. Like, there is definitely that feeling of, I mean, I think Jon Stewart and Stephen Colbert are hilarious, but... There's an extra jolt of you're on our side. You know what I mean? You're talking about things that I like. And that's not to say that I can't I can and have liked comedians that I don't necessarily agree with, but it's a lot easier when I agree with them, or at least we have a sort of a similar point of view on something. You know what I mean? Like, I don't necessarily have to completely agree with them, but if they're, you know, somewhere completely far away from where I am, it's a lot harder to like them, basically, and to stick with it. So, but so it's not fair, because then I watch Sarah Palin and I go, well, she's not on our side. In fact, she's pretty much the epitome of everything I hate. So those people, they're sheep. The people clapping for her are stupid sheep. The people who clap on our side, we're smart.
They get it.
They get it. I mean, they're smart and they understand. But the people who clap for her are idiots.
Yeah. I mean, I'll tell you, when I'm going to go see SNL in person, every review of the show was that it was not good.
Yeah.
And I thought it was one of the best ones they had done all season.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, oh, that's because I was surrounded with people who really liked it. And the thing is, that makes it really hard to write a show.
Yeah. Well, yes and no. I think it probably was partly that, but it's also when you see something live, it's so much better.
Right.
Like, imagine going to a concert and then listening to a live album.
No,
like, it's a completely different
but
experience.
I agree, but my point is that, like, everybody who's involved in the show is in that room. I think it's got to be really difficult for shows like SNL because you're there. You're in the room, you know, and you're hearing the crowd and they're all getting into it, and that's what you're experiencing it. You're experiencing all that positive energy, and then somebody comes to you and says, you know, that show wasn't really funny. Like, it was a little, you know, these things didn't work. And you're like, fuck you, it didn't work. Look, like, I got, you know, I got 150 people who disagree with you.
Yeah.
I was there. I saw it.
Well, it's funny, too, just that, because I was watching, like, the last week's episode or whatever, and I was thinking the Bobby Moynihan did a bit on Update about watching the video online.
The buffering?
And it kept buffering.
Yeah.
And I thought, I don't know what made me think this, but I was like, you know what? I bet if I saw this live, like, at the UCB Theater, it'd be really funny.
Mm-hmm.
But for some reason on TV, I don't know why, there's certain things that play better live than they do on TV. And I think that is, I would have thought they would have figured this out 35 years, you know, later. But I think there are things on SNL that probably would play a lot better live than they do on TV. And I think, but see, I think SNL is also such a strange case that it's almost not worth it to talk about, but it's not a good example, because I think they're just constantly throwing things against the wall to see what sticks. And every once in a while they catch lightning in a bottle.
Oh no.
And it's sort of like, it's, you know what, but you know what I mean? Like, so you kind of have to take the bad with the good. Just the way that show works is, you know, again, like, they would, if they had another week, if they had, you know, made the show and then took it into an editing room, it would probably be half as long, and, you know, they'd probably reshoot things or whatever. But it's just the nature of the show.
But that's, I agree with you. I agree with you entirely. But I guess part of my point is that, like, a show like Modern Family, which I happen to find very funny, they know, like, they're, to a certain degree, they can never be completely unbiased because the same people who are editing the show wrote the show.
Yeah.
They can never be completely unbiased, but there's a sense of, like, being able to watch it analytically and figure out whether or not what you did is funny and whether or not it works or not. Whereas with SNL, because, or, you know, The Daily Show or any of that stuff, anything that's done in front of those live audiences in a quick turnaround situation, emotionally, when you hear it go over well with a small group of people who are told to applause to begin with, you get a positive association with the material regardless. So you can't look at it analytically anymore because it worked.
Right.
Because you know that it worked. Whereas you can critically attack something that you did and go, you know what, that doesn't belong in the show. That does belong in the show. That doesn't feel real when somebody isn't sort of trying to convince you.
Right.
So I wonder if people who are making those shows, you know, are biased. Because I know that, like, I have grown more fond of things that I've done in a show after it went really well.
Yeah.
You know, that that I, and I probably, and there are situations where I shouldn't have. There are bits where it killed one night and I did it six times to death. You know, to deathly silence after that. But I was like, oh no, that's a good bit, even though I didn't give a shit about it the first time. But it really killed.
Yeah,
you know,
it killed once.
And so that's why I feel like the studio audience thing is ruining comedy, because it's giving a false insecurity to people and it's letting people cheat.
Well, I mean, first of all, I don't know.
I guess
if
I'm being repetitive
with
what I said earlier.
Well, but I don't know if you can say it's ruining comedy.
It's ruining comedy.
Since I believe the studio audience...
It started
first,
a comedy?
Like, it goes back to, like, the Honeymooners.
Yeah, no,
I mean, it's not like this is a new thing. In fact, I think the fact that most, even a sitcom like Two and a Half Men would... I think it's still below their dignity to do, like, what the Brady Bunch did, which is literally hit play on a tape recorder.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, at least there is, in fact, a live studio audience who's watching the show. You know what I mean? And they're recording the laughs.
Wasn't there, like, a studio audience like Gilligan's Island, too?
Gilligan's Island. I mean, the Flintstones had laughs. I mean, it got really bad somewhere in like the 60s and 70s in there when like things that clearly there was no audience for.
They're on the beach.
Was getting
laughs. Them on the beach.
Yeah. Well, I mean, even a show like MASH had to have a laugh track. Mm-hmm. You know, they had laughs in there. And in fact, on the DVD, you can turn the laughs off. And I've heard, I haven't seen it, but I've heard it actually makes MASH a far better show.
Really?
When you turn the laugh track off. Because, you know, I mean, it's ridiculous. They're clearly filming it. You know, it's like the Flintstones. I mean, clearly there's no one watching.
Yeah, clearly they're filming the Flintstones.
Well, what I'm saying, clearly no one's watching this, you know, happen live. And yet you hear these laughs that come out of nowhere that don't even make any sense. Mm. At the very least, when you're watching Two and a Half Men, it's set up like it's a play, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Like you can sort of get that sense of, oh, I'm sitting in the audience watching this. And so I understand where these laughs are coming from. But, you know, when it's something that's clearly filmed with, you know, a single camera and there's laughs, it doesn't make any sense. But, so yeah, like on that, I mean, boy, it's tough because then it's kind of like, you know, well, but the studio audience is your audience to a certain degree. So should you be playing to them? Yes, but I mean, I would think that you would, anything you write that would make this studio audience laugh, you would think is going to make the audience at home laugh. I think there's just...
But that's not true. It just isn't.
No, I agree with you. But the other thing is like, is it, there are certain things that make a studio audience laugh and not make you laugh at home? Or is it just you have to... It's harder to make the audience at home laugh. Meaning, like I said, like the difference between being at a concert and listening to a live album. I can listen to a live album and be like, this is awesome. But I don't get the same experience of being there and being like, oh my God, that, you know, that concert changed my life. It was so good.
And it is, but that's my point, is that I feel like the audience, the people that have the live studio audience, feel they're beholden to the live studio audience and not the home audience. And when you're beholden to the live studio audience, you're going to disappoint the home audience.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, you have to always be focusing on home, and it's so easy to not be when they're sitting there.
Right. Well, if we can jump to something real quick, just because I know we're running out of time.
Yeah.
But the other thing is, now I've never done it myself, but I've heard that if you're a stand-up comic and you are playing to a studio audience as opposed to being in a club or something similar and playing to a live audience, it's very different. It's a very different thing. For one thing, you can't see them.
Mm-hmm.
So if you're the kind of comic...
I can't see them in most stand-up shows.
Well, that's true.
But no, that's different.
You're a special case, though. But yeah, like you know, but the way the lights
are set
up...
But they're nowhere near.
The way the lights are set up, even, you know, anyone who doesn't have...
Right. They're in the dark and like 30 feet away.
Yeah. And there's literally... They're just blackness. Like, you can't see anything. And if you're used to seeing the audience and making eye contact, you know, which is a good thing to do when you're a comic, and certain comics, that's their bread and butter. I mean, that's what they do. They talk to people specifically. Once you get out there and all you're doing is talking to a blackness that occasionally, hopefully, a laugh will
noise,
come out of nowhere, it can be very weird, you know, and a lot of first-timers, you know, will say, like, I completely blew it because I didn't know how to handle it, you know. I know I was just reading something about Reggie Lewis, and he just talked about the first time he was on The Tonight Show with Johnny Carson. He was just running around and like jumping up and down and screaming because he's like, I didn't know what to do. Like, I didn't know how to reach these people. And like, and then I watched the tape afterwards and I was so embarrassed. Cause like, that's, first of all, it's not me. Like I'm not even that kind of a comic, but I just like couldn't seem to break through that wall. So, I mean, I think that's another thing. It's very, you know, it's different than if you're doing a live show.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? I think it's an even third sort of thing between the audience watching at home and doing it live in a club. Now you got this sort of this amorphous thing out there that you're trying to please. And yeah, and I mean, I guess I can't say a show like Daily Show doesn't care about the audience at home. I'm sure they give a lot of thought to the audience at home, probably more than the audience in the studio.
Mm.
But it's only human nature. If you were destroying every night with the studio audience, you probably start to get not lazy, but start to think like, man, we are killing.
But yeah,
we're doing really good. We're destroying. And so there's not that, you know, that you can almost start to believe you're impressed to a certain degree, where even though you have the warm-up comic and they're instructing you when to laugh and when to applaud, you can still hear that laughter and applause and go, man, we are, this is a really good show, and not think like, oh, we really got to step it up and get better. But, yeah, I don't know, though. But, you know, it's funny, though. I feel like also TV, talking about, like, it's not as good watching it on TV than you do live. But I also think, like, bad comedy isn't nearly as bad at home when you're actually there. And you're like, oh, I can't look at anyone in the eye. This is just a tragedy. At least for me, I find bad comedy to be so uncomfortable. Like when it's just when someone's bombing.
Yeah, because
some
people
love it.
You can change the channel when you're at home.
Yeah, yeah, but still though, but there's a disconnect where you're like, it doesn't seem as bad.
Yeah.
But when you're actually there and you just want to crawl out of your skin.
Yeah. When you can hear the silence in the room.
Yeah.
When you hear like the person shuffling their feet and papers moving and you're like, uh oh.
Yeah.
That's the sound of bed.
But it's weird too. Like if you've ever seen someone do a stand-up routine with no laughs, it seems so wrong. Like it seems so, like it could be really funny, but without that response.
Yeah.
I'm saying that particular form of doing stand-up, where clearly there should be laughs there, it seems very strange.
Yeah, I mean, I've never seen it where the person was telling good jokes and there was no laughter.
No. I mean, there's no audience.
Oh, okay.
I don't mean they're bombing. I mean, you're just like, I don't know. I've just seen,
oh, yeah, no.
Like,
I mean, like, I've done auditions where it was a situation where it's like, hey, do a 5-minute set. It's just going to be the two of us in the back of the room.
Right.
Go. And you're like, whoa, no, what?
That's not how it works.
Yeah. That, like, nobody does well to that.
Yeah.
And I didn't. I guarantee you that. All right. I think we're out of time.
Yeah, we are out of time. Thank you guys so much for listening.
Yes.
I'm
thanks
excited.
Again, thanks to the studio audience.
Thanks, studio audience. You, God, so well behaved.
Yes, and thank you to the entire crew who helped us build Studio 3A.
We love you guys. You know, you got to get clear out, though. You need rules. I thank everyone again for listening. I am very excited, Dustin, to hear your further breakthroughs.
Oh, yeah, no.
Let's do this.
Yeah,
thing.
we are not gonna stop until somebody's in jail.
Yeah, and
who's dead?
And until you and I are digging up Fatty Arbuckle's corpse.
Yes.
In some L.A. cemetery. So I'm looking forward to that.
With or without permits, we may just have to go do it.
I mean, I would say
in the middle of the night.
Hopefully without.
Yeah.
I would say hopefully without.
Yeah.
It'd just be more fun that way. Because you never want to. You want to do and then apologize.
Exactly.
Not ask permission and be told no. So look forward to that. And I'm getting the wrap it up signal.
Yeah, we are out of time. Thank you very much for listening. Don't forget to write a review on iTunes.
Yes.
And we'll see you next week.
See you next week. Bye.
Bye.
You've been listening to The Comedy Nerds. If you have any questions or comments, please email us at info@thecomedynerds.com. Check out our website at thecomedynerds.com, where you can comment on any past episodes. And if you enjoyed this show, please write a review in iTunes and tell the world how awesome we are. For Dustin and myself, thank you for listening.